Well, I'm in Raleigh. Sean, you're in Denver. It's Thursday. You got a game tonight. I had one last night. And by the way, last night, Wednesday night, there were two games. And they averaged 9 goals per game. If you just break it down, right, Sean? 18 goals were scored on Wednesday night in the National Hockey League. 9 goals per game. 15 of them in the Battle of Alberta. That was wild. That was insane.
Even crazier, that game in Alberta outscored the rest of the playoffs in the second round.
That's, and what did how many goals did Calgary have in the first round? They had 15, I think, or something along those lines. And they scored 9 in game one.
Dude, it was like a celebration. It was after not being able to have your favorite food for a long time. You know, Ottinger took it away in the first round, played brilliant. And, you know, all of a sudden, they score on their first two shifts and they're like, hey, this is what it's like to score. We need to do more of this. It was like a buffet.
It was wild. I mean, I was covering a game and writing for a lot of that Calgary-Edmonton game. I was covering the game here in Raleigh between the Hurricanes and the Rangers, and we'll get to that. But, you know, you keep your eye on it and you're keeping an eye on it, and it's 6-2. And I'm like, oh, wow. All right. This is blowout city. 6-6. Like, whoa, hold on. What just happened here? Right. I mean, even our correspondent, Kurt Dusterberg here in Raleigh, said he got in his car and he heard 4 goals on like a 10-minute ride home. It was just, you know, it was nuts. It was a crazy throwback type of game. We'll talk about a little bit more with our guest today, Shane Knighty, who does the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast, but is actually broadcasting your series, Sean, for Turner, the Blues and Avalanche. So we'll get to that soon, but it was a throwback game. I'm surprised Daryl Sutter still had hair and maybe even his head on his shoulders after that game, by the way it was played. But fact is, Calgary pulled it out, and they can play way better defensively. Jacob Markstrom can play way better than net. And Edmonton's looking at it and saying, we scored 6 goals and lost. What are we going to do now? I think that's kind of the reaction I have.
Yeah, I think you throw that game out. I think that's game one. It got out of hand really early. And, you know, I think if you're Edmonton, the only thing you can do is say, you know, we can score against this team. We came back against this team. If we tighten things up a little bit defensively, and there's no way that Calgary can stay at that level, right? Like it's got to come back to earth. It's shooting percentage. It's everything else. Like it's got to come back to earth. So, you know, and each game in the playoffs has to be its own ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You can't bring the past into the next game because it'll kill you, positive or negative. Like if Calgary rests on its laurels now and is like, oh, well, we got this team's number, they're in trouble. So I don't think you're going to see 9-6 again. But I think when you look at the way these teams play, it'll be the highest scoring series out of the four of them.
You knew something was going to happen, right? I mean, you just had to know. First time Battle of Alberta since 1991. You know, two teams that have some real high-end scoring talent, obvious rivals. You just knew something was going to happen in game one the way it did. I mean, I don't know that we knew 15 goals was going to happen, but you knew something was going to happen. I also feel like it'll settle. It'll settle from here a little bit, but that settle from here could still mean Connor McDavid getting 3 or 4 points in a game, could still mean Johnny Gaudreau, you know, being, you know, terrific, could still mean Matthew Tkachuk getting another hat trick or whatever it might be. It's that type of team. It's these two types of teams. And that's the one thing we always knew this about Edmonton, Sean, like they had that high end talent. We knew they could score. Did they have enough depth scoring? Could they keep it out of the net? Right. Well, you know, they couldn't keep it out of the net last night, obviously. With Calgary, it was always the opposite. It was like, oh, they defend really well. They're structured. Nobody gets anything on them. But we forget they had 340 goal scorers, 200-point scorers, right? So even a game, if a game two is structured, I still think it could be like, a 10-goal game.
Yeah, no, for sure. And let me just say, when we were here last week, I was talking about Connor McDavid's legacy and if it falls on him, if they don't advance, and I'm going to fall on my sword now. It's not the first time I've been wrong. It won't be the last time I was wrong. Connor McDavid has been unbelievable for the last week. Mm-hmm. The last 3 games of that LA series and game one last night, he's, to me, he's a different player than even what he was. you know, took that team completely on its back, refused to let them lose to the LA Kings, and then refused to let them lay down and just say, you know what, game one's out of hand, let's save our energy and we'll make this back in game two. Because it doesn't matter whether you lose 6-1 or 8-6, right? You still lost. And we've seen teams kind of pack it up and say, I'm going to save my energy for the next game. It's a long run to the final if that's where we want to get. And he didn't do that. So I've been a pretty fierce critic, I guess, of Connor McDavid, and he's won me over in the last week.
But I think your criticism, though, was fair, and I don't even think it was criticism. It was questioning, right? It was, we had to see it. We had to see it to believe it when it really mattered. We know there was never any doubt, you know, about his ability and his talent and how good of a hockey player he is. There's never any doubt about that. It was questioning, can he do it at this time of year? Well, he's doing it at this time of the year, and now he's finally showing everybody that he's got this in his game too. He's got this in his DNA as well. I mean, he's got 12 points in the last four games. I mean, he's been absolutely lights out amazing. He led everybody in scoring in the first round with 14 points. So I understand you saying you're falling on your sword, but I don't think you were critical. I think it was more just questioning him and that, you know, can he do it? Will he be able to do it? Which I think a lot of us were wondering, maybe not will or you, but when will he do it? And he's doing it now. And look, he has to do it again. I mean, that's the thing. The Calgary Flames are a better team, right? They're a better team than the Edmonton Oilers. And Connor McDavid might have to have 3 points a night in order to win this series.
But I questioned him longer and harder all through the year, the MVP conversation, everything else. So I'm just putting it out there that I'm reconsidering my thing. And you know what? It's an interesting discussion, and it leads to something we're not going to talk about a lot here, but people should go check out. At the end of the first round, you actually wrote it. We all voted on it. We changed our power rankings around and did the players after the first round, the 16 best players in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And of course, Connor McDavid was at the top. Cale Makar, who I'm lucky enough to cover here, was right behind him. And then it was a cast of thousands. It's amazing how we value different players. Jake Ottinger was big in there from Dallas after the series he had. He'll be gone when we do it again next round, probably, as more players step up. Yeah. But it was a really cool idea, I thought, and turned out really well. So people should check it out because it's an interesting snapshot of where we're at after 2 weeks of playoffs.
Are you saying it was a cool idea because it was your idea?
No. I would never say that.
But it is. No, it's on NHL.com now, and it is an interesting snapshot. And there were a lot of players. I think it was 37 players received at least one vote by the 14 people that do the rankings normally in our Super 16 and now for this. And it was a, you know, kind of across the board too. Like a lot of people ranked Ottinger, you know, Ottinger was ranked high by some and he was ranked low by others. And, you know, so I thought it was an interesting look at how people value playoff hockey and performances in playoffs. I don't know how you don't have Jake Ottinger ranked high, but, you know, I mean, regardless, that it is what it is. So that is there now. Before we get to our interview with Shane Knighty, the sheriff, Sean, the series I'm covering, that's a missed opportunity for the New York Rangers. Like, they can say all they want, and I agree with them, that they played a perfect game for two periods and maybe even for 50 minutes and whatnot, and they played well, and they should be confident going into game two, and I will buy all of that if you're trying to sell it to me, but you cannot tell me that that's not a missed opportunity. You have an opportunity to beat a team in their building in game one when they're not playing at their best and you are, and you don't win that game. That's how you lose a series. Right there. That's how you lose series. Now, instead of having to beat the Carolina Hurricanes, who are a better team than the Rangers and have now beaten them 4 out of 5 times this season, 4 in 7 games. Now the Rangers got to beat them 4 in 6. It's way harder. They should have won that game last night. They didn't.
Yeah, but that's the difference, right? Like you can't say, oh, we played 55 minutes of good hockey and then, you know, take that as a moral victory. There's no moral victories here. And the idea that this is a young team and that they're playing with house money, that they don't even know, nobody expected them to be here. Like, to me, that's such a false narrative. You're in the final eight. Like, there's teams less experienced than the New York Rangers with less pedigree than the New York Rangers that have made it to the final four, to the final two, to the championship, right? Like, you have an opportunity and to just fritter it away is horrible, right? You look at the series I'm covering, it's almost the same exact scenario. So Colorado just dominates for 2.5 periods. They get the first goal, and then they just turn it on. When the game was over, the shot attempts were 106 to 45.
Right.
47, I'm sorry, 106 to 47. Let me give the Blues their full credit.
Full credit for the Blues.
But the Blues score on a power play late. Andrew Cogliano makes a mistake coming off, and they don't get their new guys on fast enough, and leaves a really skilled player alone in the slot, and he scores. And all of a sudden, it's overtime, and you're like, oh, my God, the Blues are going to win this game, you know, and they're going to steal it, and now the Avalanche are going to crumble. So overtime comes. 13-0 in shots in 8 minutes and 2 seconds, and then a goal from the point. Josh Manson, probably one of the least expected guys in the game to do it, and boom, they're on their way. And now they've won 8 in a row against the Blues, and they just have them crushed. They don't know what they're going to do.
Well, in similar fashion, it was Ian Cole for the Carolina Hurricanes. Nobody expected
friend of the show, Ian.
Friend Cole. Of the show, Ian Cole. That's right. Car interview, I believe that was with Ian Cole, driving Ian Cole. Look, you're right. The Colorado Avalanche are rolling. Regardless of what happens, you know, even in game 2, Sean, I believe that the Colorado Avalanche are the better team and have that skill and that ability to turn it on. I think the Rangers can come back. We've seen the Rangers come back, right? We've seen it happen all year long. They were down 3-1 in the series against the Penguins. They were down 2-0 in game 5. They won. They were down 2-0 in game 6. They won. They were down one. They were down a goal late in game 7. They won. So we've seen it all. This is a different beast for me because they have not been able to figure out the Carolina Hurricanes for 60 minutes yet this season. Even in the game they won, they got outshot 44-18, and they won 2-0 because Alexander Georgiev was in net. That's why, to me, this was a huge miss on the part of the Rangers. And we'll see where it goes. Game 2 is here in Raleigh on Friday night, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Rangers come back and win it. But to expect the Hurricanes to play the way they did last night again, that's expecting something that's not going to happen.
No, and they're so good at home. Like, you know, Rod's going to make changes and adjustments and, you know, take that kid line out a little bit because I thought they were really good in game 1. So he'll figure out a way. I mean, he was so good against the Bruins and figuring out what they wanted to do and negating that at home. They won all 4 home games and by huge scores. So it's a tall order for the Rangers.
Big time tall order for the Rangers. Before we get to Shane Eddy, I wanted to get you were talking about it a little bit, Sean, your series that you're covering, the Colorado St. Louis series. Now, can't go too deep in the weeds because it's a game in a couple of hours from the time we're recording this. So we understand that. But overall, from what you have seen from the Colorado Avalanche, we all watched them sweep the Nashville Predators. Now we've watched them win at least one game as we record this. To me, Sean, this team looks like a team that's saying, everybody says it's Stanley Cup or bust, and now we finally believe it's Stanley Cup or bust.
Yeah, it's the same team that opened 6-0 last year, and look what happened. So let's not get too far ahead of the train here. They're a super talented team. They dominated last night. I mean, or 2 nights ago, it was. I thought it was worse than the Dallas-Calgary game that Ottinger stood on his head and everybody celebrated, in game 7. Like, I thought it was even more lopsided. And when you watch these games, well, you watch tonight, and then if it gets back to a game 5, where the Avalanche really take over is in that second period and in overtime if you have it because of the long change, the altitude. You know, they get teams hemmed in, they get teams tired, and then they railroad them, right? And the stats are just unbelievable. But the one thing I will say is I do believe that Craig Berube has a plan. To me, he's an unbelievable coach when it comes to making adjustments. Again, you know, game 2, he's changing his lineup around. He's switching all 3 of his top lines and, you know, he's trying to get more balance. Look, a lot of their guys haven't gone off yet. You know, Buchnevich had 30 goals in the regular season. He has 0. You know, they had 9 guys in the regular season who scored 20 or more goals. I think only 4 of them have scored so far in these playoffs. Ryan O'Reilly, who's been stellar, has 6. David Perron has 5. And Tarasenko has 5. So after that, they haven't gotten anything. So they need more from their players, and I think Berube's a guy that can get more. I don't know if they have enough to get out of this series. They've lost 8 in a row to the Avalanche in the playoffs, which is just kind of unbelievable.
Yeah.
The sweep last year and then the last time they played the last 2 games. So I don't know if they have enough, but I think they have enough to make this a series. I think, you know, we're in St. Louis for game 6.
Is the altitude getting to you?
The altitude only gets to me when I go up the stairs. But I'll tell you this. This is the craziest place. Right now, I walked home from the morning skate today, drenched in sweat. It's got to be 85 degrees. I'm flying home for a little R&R tomorrow. I get 4 days off.
Yeah.
After 18 days on, my flight's under a winter weather advisory. It's going to drop 55 degrees, and it's going to snow tomorrow.
Whoa. All right. Yeah. We talked about a lot here, and we definitely hit on the Blues and Avalanche. Let's get to our interview with Shane Knighty, who is a broadcaster for the Vegas Golden Knights, a former player in the NHL, but he is on the Blues and Avalanche series, calling it for Turner. Here is that interview with Shane Knighty. Shane, thanks so much for joining us. You're in Denver. You got game 2, Avalanche Blues. That is tonight as we record this on Thursday. I got to ask you about the Avalanche before we get into so many other things. Are they just the team that is rolling right now, the team that everybody has expected them to be? And even if they falter a little bit, they're good enough to just pick it right back up. Whereas, you know, last year they weren't good enough to pick it up.
And I think that's the key. Just said it last year, you know, for teams to take that next step, as good as they are, as talented as they are, I think that loss last year is where they learned a lot. And Jared Bednar talked about it. He said that was addressed from day one of the regular season about, you know, they had a 2-0 lead against Vegas and then lost out and how devastating that was. But, you know, those teams and individuals that can learn from those hard lessons, that's how you grow. And I think that's what we're seeing now. This is a team that, you know, have they been really tested yet? No, I don't believe so. I think they've gone through, you know, some tough games, game 2 against Nashville, and Connor Ingram was unbelievable. That got pushed overtime. Same thing could be said game 1 with Jordan Binnington. But they didn't get frustrated. They didn't fall off their game. And I think that's the key. So they're rolling right now. They're a complete team. You know, there's so much talent there. I still think, you know, St. Louis can pressure them. I think St. Louis is a puck possession team. They've got to be a lot better in game 2. And then it's going to be interesting when I can see, you know, if you see the Avalanche get behind a couple of goals or whatever and how they react to that. That's going to be their next kind of test and challenge to see when they get pressed a little bit more.
Shane, I wanted to ask you, because you had a bird's eye view for it last year. Craig Berube was talking after game 1, before moving on in the series here, that the way back is with the forecheck for them to get Denver and to forecheck them. And that's kind of how Vegas turned around the series last year against them. I'm curious, from you watching that series, do you think it's that simple? And is it possible to forecheck this team effectively?
Well, you certainly hope so if you're the opposition. yeah, it was last year. And, you know, I talked to some people around Vegas when I was doing the Nationals. You know, how do you beat Colorado? And I said, well, last year it was that. It was, you have to get pucks behind them. Your puck manager, you can't turn it over. They're D, you have to stay on top of them. But when you get pressure, you've got to maintain possession. You've got to try to frustrate them. And they felt they were able to. Vegas, I'm saying last year, felt they were able to frustrate them, get them off their game. And that is through the forecheck and pressure and hanging on to the puck and really detailed smart with the puck. So, you know, now can that be done? Well, that was John Hines when we spoke to him in round 1. That was exactly what he said they needed to do. They need to be better on their breakouts, cleaner speed. It's kind of the same thing. I think that, you know, the plan sits in place. It's about execution now. And I think the Blues have a deeper lineup, especially up front, than Nashville did. That's why I'm excited to see what happens here in this series going forward. Can St. Louis get to their game and maybe cause a little bit of that frustration to the Avalanche? Well, you know, we'll see how it plays out. It sounds easy. I think that's been the game plan here for the opposition through 5 games, but it has been all Colorado through the first 5 games. They've won 5 in a row to start the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, I got one more on Colorado too. And we talked to Darren Pang last week, and we asked him about Cale Makar, and I wanted to ask you about Cale Makar too, because you saw him in the playoffs last year. You see him now in the playoffs this year. We know how good he is, Shane, but where is the growth in his game that you have seen from 1 year to the next?
Oh, he's special. I put him in the category. There's great players and they're special. And I think he's going to, and he's going to continue to grow. Wherever I see his game, I think it's just like any young player, especially that position, is you're learning the league. You're learning tendencies of oppositions. But the thing that makes him special is his skating ability. And he's going to continue to get stronger and understand the game and, you know, understand what he can and can't do more, which, you know, leads to offense. I think certainly defensively, he's better than people expect, and he's going to get better defensively. It's scary to think if he gets better offensively after, what, 28 goals this year? He's truly, you know, I think it was game two nationally. He had 23 shot attempts. Mm-hmm. It took him, his 12th shot on goal was the overtime winner. You know, that's for a D-man to do that, it's just incredible. And you look at, you know, the names he is at points per game in playoffs, you know, he's with the best I've ever played that position. So, and, you know, the thing with Jared Bednar, I asked him the next day about that 20. He said, you know, the funny thing is Kel would still think he could do more. And I think, so you've got a kid that not only is special, but he has the mindset to be special, that all those, the top players in the league, you know, they're constantly evolving, constantly improving in all areas of his game. So, you know, I think we're just going to continue to see him do incredible things in this league. And I think in game one against St. Louis, you know, he was okay, but he wasn't to the level I think he can get to, which is scary for if you're the St. Louis Blues. You know, he kind of had a little turnover on the first goal for St. Louis, and, you know, maybe that rattles the young player, but I think he'll turn it around and continue to be just as great as he always is.
Shane, one quick one on St. Louis before we move on to bigger topics. The main thing when they came into the playoffs was their scoring depth. They had nine guys that had scored 20 goals. I think if you go back and you look over the last 20 to 30 years, the only team that's had that kind of depth that's won, there's been teams like them, but the only one that's translated into a win was that Carolina team. Is it harder to use your depth in the playoffs because of the quality of the opposition and the ability to match up over a seven-game series?
It shouldn't be. you know, and I don't know if I have a definitive answer for that. To me, you know, I look at the Blues in that first game. They didn't have enough guys on board. You know, some big guys didn't have good games for them. I think O'Reilly and, you know, the O'Reilly Perron line was going, you know, to start the game the first period. The second period, which we've seen in Colorado in their home building, the long change, they just counterattack so quick. They take over games. But I think St. Louis, they didn't get to their game. And, you know, a lot of times you think of those teams that have depth. I don't put it on the roster. I put it on the players, right? You need more of those guys. And I think that's certainly the case. Blues need to be much better game two and in the series going forward, because I don't think, you know, it's hard to be on your game every night. There's going to, you know, the other team's trying to win. They're going to have their pushes back. Momentum shifts are such a big thing. How you manage that. And I think the Blues have a lot of experience on their team. I think they've got to start to utilize that depth. But in order to do it, you've got to have everybody willing to put in the work, willing to buy into the structure, the game plan, and then be able to execute. So I can't see being a negative when you have that much depth and 920 goal scorers.
All right, Shane, I wanted to flip. We have to get to Vegas, and we're going to get to Vegas, but I wanted to ask you a question about the other Western Conference series going on right now. Flames, yes. You know, the Battle of Alberta. I mean, I don't know that anybody could have foreseen that in game one, 15 goals, but do you think that is a prelude to what we will see the rest of the series, or does it calm down from here?
Oh, boy. I think it has to calm down. I don't think that's what we're going to continue to see. You know, this is a special one for me. I grew up, you know, Manitoba, Battle Alberta. I remember watching, you know, through the 80s, early 90s, and it looked like we were in the late 80s there again last night with the score. And watched the game last night. I've pretty much watched every game in playoffs here, unless I've been doing a game. And yeah, it was entertaining. I just think it settles down. You know, it was incredible. It's one of those games where you just, what is happening? You know, just chaos. You know, you think it's over 5-1, 6-2, and then credit to the Oilers. Connor McDavid showed why he's the best player in the world, you know, helping lead back and 4 points again, what he's been doing in playoffs. I think this series settles down. I think, you know, Markstrom will be better. I think having watched him against Dallas and what he did this year as a, you know, Vezina finalist, it's one of the best. You know, Mike Smith, I think he'll be better than he was. I think that's certainly an advantage for the Flames in that position. And I, you know, the Flames, to me, they're a team that can go up offensively with a lot more depth. Edmonton relies heavily on their top guys. So it'll be interesting going forward, but I don't think we're going to, you know, we could see some, you know, 6-4 games. I don't know if we're going to get up to those high single digits or even double digits, but if we do, great. I think it's great for the fans. The fans love it. It's entertaining.
So let me ask you this, as a player on Edmonton, is that a positive in game one that you came back when you were left for dead, or is it a negative that you came back and then you spit it up again?
I think it was a good that they had the pushback, but to me, that's just a negative to start that game, to give up two goals so quick, not to be ready out of the gates. You know, the interesting thing, you know, I think maybe the biggest positive for is when you can win a game and realize and learn from it that, hey, that wasn't good enough. And that would be, to me, be the Flames, right? They're able to score at will and come out of that game. But I think they're in a better position because, you know, they won the game, yet they know we can't do that again. Whereas the Oilers, they've got to rework their whole plan. Yeah, it's great to come back, but still they're chasing it all game. You know, they tied it at 6, but wasn't long after that. They weren't able to take that next step. So, you know, that's what playoffs are. It's constant adjustments. It's constant tweaks here and there to try and find that edge.
Go back to what Jay Woodcroft said. We scored 6 goals on a Vezina Trophy caliber goalie. You got to win that game, right? You got to win that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So Vegas, we went 10 minutes without asking you about Vegas. That's too long. So the question I want to ask is, what the heck is going on in Vegas? But that's way too broad. So we'll shrink it down a little bit. The coach, we know that Pete DeBoer is out now. What kind of coach do this Vegas Golden Knights team need now? Is there a certain, you know, type of coach that you think that this group needs?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I can answer it. They've had 2 good coaches come through. You know, it was injuries. We've heard that about the Golden Knights, and it was true. It was a fact. I still think they had enough to find a way in the playoffs. Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, this is decisions by people who are way up the pay grade than me. And, you know, that's what they're tough decisions. And they felt that there's a new voice. So what kind of coach? Did they maybe want a harder coach? I'm not sure, because to me, they want to get back to that identity they had before, you know, playing a little fast. It's tough with the injuries they had. So it's tough to give a fair of assessment. You know, I think the people that know are the ones in hockey ops, and what they're looking for. They constructed this team. They want to, I guess, find someone who can bring out the best of how they constructed, how they see it being played, the style, and taking it that next level. You know, not making playoffs for the first time, although they've only been around five years. There's high expectations, there's pressure, and I guess they're looking for the guy that they feel can take them there. And you know, it seems to be, you know, you have a short leash, because it hasn't, you know, they've been through a few coaches now, and hopefully the next one's the right one.
Do you find it at all unbelievable when you think about it? Sometimes you just said it, 5 years, and the bar has been set so high that, I mean, there's teams, you know, that have gone a decade without playoffs, you know, went 25 years into their expansion experience without playoffs. Do you ever sit back and think about how accelerated this has been?
Oh, absolutely. You know, year one, Stanley Cup Finals, you know, that's, to me, that's, you know, the most historic inaugural season in pro sport, that what they did. It was truly incredible. And, you know, I often replay going back that year. And I remember talking with, you know, when Dave Gosher and I got called on the broadcast, we're like, well, it's going to, you know, new team, expansion team. It's going to be a long year. You know, let's, you know, how are we going to call a game? You know, we'll move to the other team, start talking about them when games get out of hand. We never had a chance to do that. It just out of the gate, boom. And then, you know, I remember, okay, October, all right, they're feeding. And on November, all right, it was like, when's the carpet getting pulled out? When's it coming out from underneath? And it never did. And in December, finally, I just said, this team's for real. And, you know, so Stanley Cup final, and then 2 Final Fours, or whatever they're called in the bubble. And, you know, they've had a lot of success. And then now you're not in playoffs. And you look at the talent that they've brought into this team, and how they've tried to construct it going forward to be better. And I guess, you know, they didn't make playoffs, and, injuries were a huge factor, but still, you know, they want to have that success. So, you know, I think the success of the first year, just, you're right, it accelerated everything, the projection they have for this hockey team and organization to succeed.
And in that first year, they had a very clear identity, right? They were the Golden Misfits, right? It was just so easy to establish that identity for them.
And yes, and easy for players to get to it, right? You kind of, everybody has a chip on the shoulder. You can't manufacture that every year. That's lightning in a bottle when you bring a group together like that, that has a common, well, not only a common goal, but they're, you know, they all feel kind of left out and they want to prove, you know, everybody wanted to prove, you know, the world wrong. And they did it together. And you can't, you know, you can't just manufacture that every season because it's a different circumstance. So it was really unique in that way. And I think that helped it.
Yeah. And now you look at it, it's a destination place that guys want to go to. And we see it with Jack Eichel and Alex Pietrangelo and Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty. I mean, guys who have come in there, obviously. So you can't recreate that Misfits identity, but the team needs to have some type of identity. Do you think that was a little bit harder, well, maybe lost this season in terms of finding an identity, mainly just because the injuries, like, was the injuries, I think they're a real thing, right? I mean, you brought it up.
They are.
That's a hard thing to find an identity when you have all these guys out, right?
It was 100%. You can't build a culture and identity, not only when, you know, just depending on the injuries, you know, every team goes through injuries and sometimes there's lots, but when you take out Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty injured in the second game of the year, then William Karlsson went out for 6 weeks, not longer, then Alec Martinez was out for 4 months, like, not only key players, but voices, leaders. Those are the guys that help build, you know, the identity and culture in that room. And then, you know, Pacioretty and Stone, each, I think they had out 3 times this year, and how important they are to the team. And then Martinez arguably was, you know, their best all-around defenseman the year before. And a big voice in that room. I think, you know, he was missed a lot. A guy who's won, you know, 2 Stanley Cups, important piece, you know. And then Jack Eichel, they traded for him. He wasn't available for a long period of time. Then we found out he played the last 4 or 5 weeks with a broken thumb, which, you know, every team has guys playing through that. So Riley Smith, they lost. He's a big part. It's just, you can't, because they never really got to see what they had where you could build something.
And, you know, you brought up Jack Eichel, and I wanted to ask you about that specifically. It came out that he was hurt. He had been hurt and came back and played really well initially and didn't play poorly the rest of the year. But I'm curious what your thoughts are after seeing him for 20-plus games, what the ceiling is for him next year with a healthy Vegas team.
Well, I think it's to me, I have a tall, tall ceiling for him to reach. His ability and what he can do on the ice, you know, I think you always get more of appreciation for guys when you see them day to day, like practice, skating, the drills, the skill set they have, you know, in those scenarios. Obviously you want it, it's got to translate to games, which it does with him. I think, you know, a lot of this for him was just finding his fit. And I don't know if he really did, because, you know, there really wasn't any set lines. It was different people he's playing with, but for him, I think it was important to get back first and foremost to playing hockey, to feeling comfortable physically in an NHL game after, you know, the surgery he had. And then it's, you know, for guys that have played in one organization a long time and then moved to another, it's not instantaneous that you fit right away. You know, I think we saw even in Vegas, it took Pacioretty when he first got, it took a while. The first year wasn't great. Then all of a sudden he's back to, you know, 30 goal scorer. Alex Pietrangelo, you know, first year, obviously, you know, it was a COVID and the bubble, but still. And then, you know, last year, just, you know, the man you expected. So I think, you know, he got integrated into the group with the team, the organization. Next year, I expect big things. I think Jack Eichel, to me, can be a top 10 scorer in the league. He should be up there with that skill set, the ability he has. I was surprised how fast he was. I knew he was fast, but it's a different fast, the way he skates, than McKinnon and McDavid. McKinnon's, you know, they're so powerful. All these guys, Jack's like kind of almost like slow, methodical stride, but he is flying. And I'm very excited to see what he can do next year. I think he'll be settled in and ready to go and motivated.
Last one from me. I mean, and it's just maybe an observation more than anything that you could comment on, but in regards to Vegas, it's kind of funny to me that, you know, the team that doesn't make the playoffs that has now fired its coach and is going through a coaching change, it's already expectations are so high again next year, right? I mean, we don't even know who's going to be the coach of this team, but expectations are already through the roof. And is that fair?
Sure. Should be. They're a cap team, above the cap, but they
above it.
we'll get to the cap. But yeah, they're a team that every year wants to be considered a Stanley Cup contender. And you know, they've been to the Cup Finals. They've been to the conference twice. And you know, now the new coach, you know, basically he sees, okay, you know, they need somebody to take them to that final. They got to get back to the final. They want to be a team that competes for the Stanley Cup, and that's the expectations. And you've got to put it, when you've got the likes of the players we've been talking about in your roster, yeah, that's what you need to have. That's pressure. That's what you have to deal with when you're the top or echelon teams. And now it's a matter, to me, it's on the players. It's getting the right coach, and then it's another new voice. But this, to me, is on the players. They need to execute and figure it out. I always go back to the players having been one. We're the ones that go out there. You can drop all the X's and O's you want. They vary different from team to team. There's adjustments coaches make, but it's on the players to go out. They're the ones that got to go out and execute it.
Shane, thank you so much for joining us. This was awesome. It's been great hearing you, always on the Vegas broadcast, but doing national games this year with TBS. It's great to see you guys do the games and everything else. And I know you're busy, so thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, best time of year right now. Love it. So it's great to be part of it, calling games.
Good stuff there from Shane Knighty, Sean. And I wanted to just continue on with a thought. He was saying that it's on the players, right? In Vegas, it's on them to execute. It's on them. I can tell you right now that with the players that they have and the disappointment of this season, if they're healthy next season, whoever their coach is going to be will be a Jack Adams Award finalist. Just the way it goes.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that is the way it goes.
Right? It is.
Like, you turn around a team, it doesn't matter how good a coach you are. Like, the fact that John Cooper is never in that conversation,
Mike Sullivan,
is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And look, the carousel is going to be wide open, right? For coaching, you look at it, Lane Lambert got hired this week for the Islanders. Yep. So that means Barry Trotz is on the market, unbelievably, right?
Yeah, he's interviewing in Winnipeg, Philadelphia. He's interviewing a lot of places. You know, he's been and Lane Lambert, that the Islanders didn't want Lane Lambert on the market. That's why they hired him.
Yeah, yeah, and teams aren't interviewing Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz is interviewing teams. He will pick the team and the city that he wants if he wants to do it, right? And you know, maybe it's Winnipeg because it's close to home, and that's a slam dunk. So Paul Maurice is out there. He's had a little bit of rest. Does he come back? You know, there's a lot of quality coaches out there, and it doesn't seem that the carousel's done. Cam Neely in Boston came out today and said, I don't know if Bruce Cassidy is our coach. I don't know that we want to play this way. I don't know that it's a fair criticism. I mean, they never had a number two center this year after David Krejci walked away. You know, they didn't get a second defenseman until Hampus Lindholm at the trade deadline, and then he got hurt. I put Bruce Cassidy in that conversation that we just had of coaches that should almost perennially be in the Jack Adams conversation, because I think the Bruins are a model organization when it comes to consistency and the way they play the game and the way that he gets the most out of the players that he has.
I think he got the most out of this team that he could get, Bruce Cassidy, this season, more than I thought he was going to get, to be honest with you. Like they didn't have Tuukka Rask except for a handful of games. Right. So you're playing Swayman and Ullmark. You know, you don't have a number two center. Krejci's gone. Right. There's just like the defense is a little bit, you know, of a work in progress. McAvoy's terrific. Obviously you got Bergeron playing on perhaps his last year. We don't know. Right. And is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Right. And yet here they were. I mean, they took the Carolina Hurricanes to game seven when I didn't think after the games one and two, they had any business being in that series. And yeah, they took them to game seven. I think Barry Trotz is the marquee guy on the market. Right. And I think you're right. He's interviewing teams. They're not interviewing him. If Bruce Cassidy were to hit the market, and I don't know if the Bruins are going to do it or not, but if he were to get there, he would be quickly the number two guy. And if he gets there after Trotz takes a job, he's the number one guy. And it's not. And to me, the way he coaches, the way he gets the most out of his players, and the way he is so up to date on the way the game is right now, it's not even close. Who's, you know, there isn't another. There's a lot of good coaches, right? But to me, Bruce Cassidy is right behind Barry Trotz if he becomes a free agent.
Yeah, no, and who knows what happens. I mean, that'll be Don Sweeney's decision, and supposedly he's in the process of getting a new contract. You know, that was the other thing Cam said at the end of his availability. I believe it was today. You know, so Don will make that decision. Clearly, when your team president is saying, I don't know if I like the way we play, you're getting a little bit of feedback there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Bruins, right? What if Patrice Bergeron decides he wants to retire? He said he won't play for anybody else. So it's Bruins or bust, mm-hmm. very much like Tuukka Rask. And, you know, I can't imagine a hockey world without Patrice Bergeron playing for the Bruins. Like, it's sad and incomprehensible to me, because he might be my favorite player to watch.
Yeah. He's that good. I mean, he's been that good for so long. And look, he's that type of player, Sean, that if you lose a guy like that, he's such a glue player, right? I mean, he's so important to that team in so many different areas. He impacts every area of the team. Everything that they do is based on what Bergeron does. And if he were to be gone, if he doesn't come back, like he's the type of player that when that guy leaves, you go into a rebuild. Like that's what happens. And I don't know that that's something in Boston that they would stomach right now with all the success that they've had there. But there comes that point where it's got to have to get done. It's going to come in Pittsburgh eventually, right? It came to the New York Rangers. Chicago Blackhawks are going through it. The Detroit Red Wings are going through it, right? The Philadelphia Flyers might have to do it. I mean, there comes to that point where you just, that guy leaves or those two guys leave, and you just say, we don't have enough. And where's the worst place to be in this league? It's in the middle, right? So if you don't have enough and that guy leaves, you might, that's the rebuild. That signifies a rebuild.
Again, they hinted at that at their end of season media that dragged out for 3 days, one day with Butch, one day with Sweeney.
It's like
one
8 hours with players Cam. Too.
Yeah, but – you know, and there was hints that, oh, yeah, we think the market could bear a rebuild. But, you know, as far as Patrice Bergeron goes, like, he's a Selke Trophy finalist. He's probably going to win again.
Yeah.
He's an elite point producer. He drives maybe one of the best lines in hockey, and he's thinking about retiring. And to me, that's who he is, right? Like, if he can't be the player that he wants to be, not the player that you want him to be or I want him to be or the Bruins want him to be.
Yep.
If he can't be the player that he wants to be, very much like Nick Lidstrom in that way.
Yes, exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
He's going to pull the plug and say, you know what? I'm going out because I can't be true to myself anymore. And the other thing, let's not forget, this guy has a lot of miles on his body. You think about the things he went through to play in that final against Chicago and all the other things that he's gone through in his career. There's a lot of mileage on that body. He may not be as old as some of the players in this league, but the tread's getting a little mm-hmm. thin.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because it brings me to Sidney Crosby when we talk about this and you know, to be at the high level and not accept it, right? Sidney Crosby comes out this week and says he wants to play three more seasons, at least three more seasons. That's his length of his contract. I can guarantee you that as long as he's healthy, Sidney Crosby is going to be playing at a very high level for three more seasons, right? But then it comes down to, is his level, and this is what Bergeron's dealing with right now, right? Is his level at, is the level good enough for him? That, like, you don't want to settle. And I think Sidney Crosby is going to eventually go through that as well, as Patrice Bergeron is going through now, as Nick Lidstrom went through it not that long ago.
Yeah, and there's other guys that just will continue to go, right? Like, you think about a Joe Thornton in Florida.
Yep.
You know, he's played. He wants to win the cup, right? And that's a huge difference. Part of the motivation. But so it's different from every player. Some players can't walk away at the top. Like, there's that what if I played one more year, what could happen? And then one more year turns into three more years. Mm-hmm. But for Sid, he can play. I mean, he was a point per game producer this year. He was on my MVP ballot, of which I don't have an official one,
right?
But he was on our trophy tracker. He was one of the five most valuable players in the league to me. He makes that team go, and he's earned the right to play for as long as he wants in Pittsburgh. And there's a couple other guys there that I think have earned that right that I don't know that they'll get in Malkin and Letang. And I think this is going to be a really interesting summer for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, and if Sidney Crosby doesn't get hurt in game five, by the way, they're still playing.
Well, I was going to say who we're going to rue for a long time, the opportunity they let slip through their hands in round one.
100%. I agree with that. You know, you're up 3-1 in the series. You got to win it. You're up 2-0 in game five. You're up 2-0 in game six. You got a 1-goal lead in game seven. You got to win those games. You got to win it because this team could have been in another run. Like they could have. They were getting healthy too. Like they could have made another run. They didn't. And now you're in. And I wrote it after game seven. You know, is this the end of the era? Right. I mean, is this it? Right. And it's fair to ask. It's fair to wonder. I don't think all three will be back. Sid will be. Obviously, he's signed. If I had to take a bet, I would say Malkin's going to re-sign. But I don't know about Letang. Right. And here's the thing. What sold me on that opinion that I just gave is in their post game, in their post-mortem, a couple of days after they were eliminated, Malkin was talking about his love for Pittsburgh, his love for the city, his love for Sid, the love for playing for the Penguins and all of that. And Letang was like, well, we'll see what happens. You know, well, my agent and I have to figure it out. And, you know, I've loved my time here. We'll see what happens. To me, he's gone and Malkin resigns.
If I'm making a hockey decision in Pittsburgh,
you're reversing
Letang. Picking Letang all day, every day. That guy gets buried under criticism all the time. I don't know why. He's an elite, elite defenseman. Does he make mistakes in his own end? Yes. They're mistakes of aggression. He's not as bad a defender as people think he is. To me, he's an elite, elite defenseman that can still play 25 minutes a game. And they don't grow on trees. And if he hits the market, there's going to be teams falling all over themselves, even in a cap-strapped world, to sign that guy.
I agree with you. If I had to make a decision, a hockey decision, it would be Letang over Malkin. And look, when you're making those decisions, you have to take, you know, emotion out of it, right? I mean, you can't have that emotion in making that decision. A strict hockey decision, who's a more valuable player right now to the Pittsburgh Penguins? To me, it's Chris Letang. And I think I do wonder about Evgeny Malkin after a full offseason of training, if he's going to get some of that speed and power back that he was lacking. But I think you're right. It's a Letang decision. For me, it's Letang, but I think it's going to go the other way, Sean. Last team before we get out, and you know, we save maybe the most interesting for last, right? the team everybody wants to talk about, the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was all different this year, Sean. Everything was different this year. This year, they didn't blow it. No. They did, right? I mean, they should have won. They lost to the champs. I get that. But the Toronto Maple Leafs should be playing right now in the second round, and they're not. And that's on them. And you could say it's different, but it's the same result. It's the exact same result.
It blew me away, like, afterwards that Sheldon Kennedy said, well...
Sheldon Keefe.
Sheldon Keefe, sorry. We got more respect in the handshake line this time than we have in the past. Like, we did better. We got further. We're closer. You were closer 2 years ago. You were closer last year. Like, how many baby steps are you going to take, like, before you get to where you said you need to be? And to me, the most amazing thing was, as this all led up, you know, we were like, the directive's been sent. Playoffs are bust. If they don't make the playoffs, there's going to be changes. People are going to pay for it. Nobody's going to pay. There were votes of confidence handed out left, right, and center. Everybody got a prize. It was like an Oprah show. You get a vote of confidence. You get a vote of confidence. Like,
it's amazing.
Why isn't there anything happening? Like, you didn't make it. And you said this was the year you were going to make it. So I'm perplexed. And I'm perplexed that such a rabid hockey market would accept it again.
See, here's my thing on this. I have parallel opinions on this. Number one is, it's not better. Like, they're trying to play it off as it's better. You know, they got more respect. It's better. They're closer. You lost. You lost in seven games yet again. Yet again, you didn't get out of the first round. You lost. You weren't good enough. You needed to be. You should have been. This is the best Leafs team that's played in these, you know, last 5-6 years that they've been in. This is the best one. They should be playing in the second round. They're not. But I don't know that heads should roll. That's where I'm at. This, like, I don't mind that Kyle Dubas is back and Sheldon Keefe is back. It doesn't bother me because you need to keep stability. And I think stability is very important in this situation. They're underachieving in the playoffs, but if they go a route where they blow things up, that blows up the stability. And now you don't have any idea of what to expect. With these guys coming back, it's stable. It makes sense. They had a very good season of, you know, they were fine. They were close. They got the game seven, but I think that stability is very important for this group to keep at it, to keep going, because how many baby steps are you going to take? I agree with that criticism, but I do think with the talent that they have, the ability that they have, and if they keep it together, those baby steps, they're going to be running soon. And I do believe that they're going to not walk. They're going to go from baby steps to a full on sprint at some point.
Yeah, maybe. And look, I'm not advocating that heads roll. I think they've done a really good job, but there were promises.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That it would be different if there wasn't success in the playoffs this year. There were threats. Like, it was all laid out beforehand. And a game seven loss against the two-time defending champions, when much like the Pittsburgh Penguins, you had them. They had the champions. They had them down on one knee. They were at an eight count. And they let him off the mat, and they let Vasilevskiy find his game. And the poor Florida Panthers, because Vasilevskiy, if he's found his game, it's going to be a long slog for a team that's really talented offensively. And we didn't talk much about that series at all. But I don't know how you come back next year with everything exactly the same and say, we're done. We're ready now. Now we're going to run, and we're going to go deep in the playoffs.
I think the team will change a little bit, obviously, but I don't mind them bringing back the same that stability, like I mentioned. And you brought it up before when you said, you know, each game in the playoffs, each game in a series is its own ecosystem. And I think you have to look at it that way too. Now that this playoff series that the Maple Leafs just played is its own ecosystem, separate from last year, separate from the year before that. And if you look at it as its own ecosystem, they went to game seven with the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. There's no shame in losing to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions when you play well. They didn't play poorly. You know, like it's not like they were bad and they lost to the two-time defending champs. So there's no shame in that. But I think you also have to have an honest look at it and say, there's something missing here. There's something that we need. What is that? But I don't think it's a new coach, and I don't think it's a new GM.
Who was the home team in that series?
It was Toronto.
So there's no shame in losing to the lower seed?
Well, I mean, I guess you could say, if you look at it that way, you could also look at it that way. Yeah, you could look at it that way. There would be shame because you were the favorite to win. That lower seed was a two-time defending Stanley Cup champ. So let's be a little honest here, you know?
Okay. Well, look, and it's going to be argued about all summer. It's going to be argued about all next year. And we're going to get to the playoffs and they're going to be in another game seven. And we're going to argue about it again. And someday it's going to change because the statistical improbability of losing all the game sevens that they've lost in the ways that they've lost them is astronomical. But there's a lot of teams left still playing. There's eight. The series are unbelievable. I think we've done a good job today of cataloging them and letting our listeners know where they're at and giving them a few tidbits, and we'll be back at it next week to do it again.
Absolutely. So thank you very much for listening. Always follow us on Twitter at The Rink, on Twitter at DRosenNHL, at SRourke_NHL. If you get a chance, rate and review us, and enjoy the playoffs.